Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. He saw there the all-powerful personality of Godhead in His boring incarnation, bearing the earth upward on the ends of His tusks and robbing Him of His splendor with His reddish eyes. The demon laughed, "Oh, an amphibious beast." Please repeat. He saw there.
He saw there.
The all-powerful,
personality of Godhead,
in His boring incarnation,
bearing the earth
upward on the ends of His tusks,
and robbing Him
of His splendor
with His reddish eyes.
The demon laughed, "Oh, an amphibious beast." Did we get that cleared up? Here's the pie. What's that? Okay. Purport. In the previous verse, we have discussed the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Varaha, the boar. While Varaha, with his tusks, engaged in uplifting the submerged earth from the depth of the waters, the great demon Hiranyaksha met him and challenged him, calling him a beast. Demons cannot understand the incarnations of the Lord. They think that His incarnations as a fish or boar or tortoise are big beasts only. They misunderstand the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even in His human form, and they deride His descent. In the Chaitanya Sampradaya, there is sometimes a demoniac misconception about the descent of Nityananda Prabhu. Nityananda Prabhu's body is spiritual, but demoniac persons consider the body of the Supreme Personality to be material, just like ours. Abhijananti Mamudha. Persons who have no intelligence derive the transcendental form of the Lord as material. So, the text again. Dadarsha tatra vijitam daradaram praniyamana avanim agradam straya Ushnantamakshna Swarucho Runa Sriya Jahasa Chaho Vanagocharamriga. He saw there the all-powerful personality of Godhead in His boring incarnation, bearing the earth upward on the ends of His tusks and robbing Him of His splendor with his reddish eyes. The demon laughed, "Oh, an amphibious beast." Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tenamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Pasikadhyade Satarane. Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Abhidhananti Mamudha Manushim Dhanumashityam Parambhavam Ajananto Mamabhuta Maheshwaram. That the fools, they deride at my descending in this human-like form. They don't know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. If we want to understand things properly, if we want to experience things properly, we have to understand things properly. Therefore, from the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that we don't understand things properly. Because anyone who's in the material concept of life, who thinks that they're a product of material energy, is under illusion. And under illusion, one doesn't understand things properly. It's not possible to be an illusion and to understand things properly. Therefore, we should understand from the very beginning that we don't understand things. Because if we understood things properly, we wouldn't be an illusion. And we just have to check and ask ourselves, do I identify myself to some degree, or to a large degree, with this gross and subtle material bodies? And if I do, I'm an illusion. And if I'm an illusion, I don't understand things properly. And if I don't understand things properly, then whatever I'm doing is not in harmony with reality, and therefore I'm not experiencing reality. I'm an illusion. I'm experiencing whatever illusion I happen to be under. So in illusion, we think we're ourselves with this body, and we think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when He comes, is also made out, His body is made out of material energy. That's if we accept his appearance at all. Generally speaking, if there's a historical place, people more or less will accept that someone was there. If you go to America, they have a place where George Washington chopped down a cherry tree. Therefore, people generally don't doubt that he was an historical figure. Or you'll go to the presidential library for different presidents. So people don't doubt the fact that these persons were actually historical figures. Therefore, if we go to India, we'll find that there are historical places where Krishna had his appearance and activities. Generally, if you go to Vrindavan, people don't doubt that at some time in the past, at least, Krishna had personally manifested his appearance there. But people think that Krishna's activities are something like our activities, maybe a little bit more extraordinary, but ultimately Krishna took birth and Krishna died. Then, if Krishna took birth and Krishna died like the rest of us, then it remains to be seen who is actually the controller of the universe. If Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, Kalosmi lokashe krit pravrido lokansa maharta niha pravrita itepi tuam nabhivi shanti sarve evasita pratnikeshi yoda, the time I am the destroyer of all the worlds and I have come here to engage everyone, that except for you, the five Pandavas, everyone here will be slain. So Krishna is actually material, if his body was material, and he took birth and died like the rest of us, then who's actually controlling time? Then it remains to be seen who that person is. Krishna claims that he's that person. But if he's not the person, there must be some other person who's God. But so far, that other person who's God hasn't come forward and spoken a book like the Bhagavad Gita. So if there was another person who was God, who was actually controlling time, then why hasn't he come forward and spoken Bhagavad Gita so far? He's had at least 5,000 years to catch up to Krishna. But he hasn't made any, you know, he must be somewhat conscious if he's controlling everything. So why does he let Krishna claim that he's God, and we go on without any understanding of who actually is God? In the absence of any other personality claiming to be the Supreme, we have to accept Krishna as Supreme. Whoever Krishna may be, still there is a person. We can call him Krishna, we can call him Kala, we can call him someone else, something else. But ultimately there's a person who's controlling the material energy through his agency called time. Now if Krishna is correct, and he actually is God, then his appearance and activities are not the same as ours. Because if he's controlling time, why should he be under the control of time? Why should his body be the same as ours? If he's the controller of time, and time is changing everything, then time wouldn't, he wouldn't have it that time is going to change him also, because eventually he'd disappear, and then time would disappear. But so far as we can see, the time has not disappeared. It hasn't changed anything. So the controller of everything must also not be changing at all. Just as the soul is not changing anything, so the Supreme Soul is controlling everything. He can't be changing either. So it doesn't take an atomic scientist to understand these things. Actually, it takes someone with a little bit of intelligence. Unfortunately, Maya Aparita Jnana, for the most part, so-called learned scholars, their intelligence has been taken away by illusion. And especially, Krishna says, because they deny Krishna, and the agency called Maya is there for such personalities who deny Krishna to take all their intelligence away. not all their intelligence. They can have intelligence to try to manipulate the material energy, but they can't understand the person behind the material nature. Their idea is to compete and try to overcome the material laws as if they can conquer the Supreme Lord and his different energies. Therefore, they'll spend eternity here in the material world trying to conquer material nature and just wasting their time. In the meantime, suffering. On the other hand, if we want access to reality, we have to use our intelligence. Reality is not something which is outside of something we can understand with our intelligence. So unless we use our intelligence, then we can see immediately when we stop using our intelligence, when we stop seeing through the scriptures, when we stop taking shelter of the scriptures, immediately our intelligence is taken away by illusion. And we're once again in the bodily concept of life, full of doubts about who we are and who everyone else is, and whether Krishna is actually God, or whether I can become God in some way or another. We start thinking, I am Cupid, or I am Romeo, or I am Juliet. Commonly, that's what people fall into in the material world, first of all. That I am going to become a big enjoyer in the material nature. I'm going to be the object of someone's attention, at least. They're going to love and serve me out of simply my effulgence. See, my effulgence. My prowess, or whatever else. So we may think it's completely normal. As a matter of fact, if one is not in that consciousness of being Romeo or trying to become Juliet in the material world, one is considered quite abnormal. One will consider that this person must be quite perverted in some way or another. Never mind that, well, I guess we can say, in the kingdom of the fools, it's folly to be wise. But the fact is that we're 1/10,000th the size of Tip here in size. We're a tiny little spiritual being with a big illusion. Actually, not a big illusion, but for us it's a big illusion. And therefore, considering ourselves to be this body, and therefore considering ourselves to have some special position in the universe or in existence because of our body, is just another product of illusion. All we can consider intelligently is because I'm a spiritual soul, therefore my real interest in life is to utilize this present body or a desire to dovetail my desires with that of Krishna so that this body, my mind, my words can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. Then there's some possibility that the illusory energy will dissipate by Krishna's orders and Krishna will give me some revelation of what is actually reality. We can't force revelation. There's no study that we can do to realize Krishna. There's no activity we can do in itself will realize, help us realize, well, cause Krishna to reveal himself. Ultimately, Krishna has to judge our sincerity and see whether he thinks it's appropriate to reveal himself. We can't demand that the sun come up in the morning. We can, all night, we can rave about how the sun must arise. And as a matter of fact, in this world, there are usually some people who are crazy enough to think that they're controlling the sun and the moon and everything else. And if we ask them, can you please, it's very dark here, can you have the sun come up a little bit? He said, yes, of course I can do that, but I don't want to. No problem, but I just don't feel like it today. Or tomorrow or the next day. Therefore, using our intelligence, understanding that we're souls, and ultimately that there is a supreme soul who is providing us with the material nature, gross and subtle, according to our desires and what we deserve, then if we utilize that same energy in desiring to be utilized in Krishna's service, as we find out through his representatives how to properly utilize this body, our mind and words, when we desire those desires coming down into simple succession, then the result is that Krishna will reveal himself and we'll be able to gradually understand who the Supreme Person actually is and who we are and what the goal of life actually is. Some goal of life which will actually give us real enlightenment, real understanding of what happiness is permanently. And the material nature, because we're under it, will always doubt, cause us to have so many doubts. How is this possible? We should be suffering. Everyone else is suffering. We should suffer too. We shouldn't get too blissful. We'll become out of reality. When you're in a prison and everyone's breaking bricks, and someone sees that someone's not breaking bricks, they say, why is this man not breaking bricks? What's wrong with him? And he'll feel guilty. Everyone else, all my friends are breaking bricks. Why am I not breaking bricks? Maybe I should go there and break bricks too. Or as Prabhupada says, one man is told that if you drink alcohol, you'll go to hell. So he said, well, my father drinks alcohol. What will happen to him? Well, he'll go to hell. Well, my mother also drinks alcohol. What will happen to her? Well, she'll go to hell. All my brothers and sisters, they drink alcohol. What will happen to them? Well, they'll go to hell too. But all my friends drink alcohol. Well, you'll all go to hell. So his conclusion is, well, if my father and mother and brothers and sisters and all my friends are in hell, then hell is heaven. So everyone in this present society, practically speaking, except for very few people, are an illusion. To some degree or another, we're also an illusion. And therefore, we're prone to become influenced by other people in more illusion than we are. When it says that Krishna is God, he's controlling every atom, we're also thinking sometimes, oh, how is that possible? This is an exaggeration. How can he know everything that's going on? He'd be quite confused trying to keep it all together. Because we judge Krishna from our point of view. Therefore, we have to keep on going back to the basics. I'm not this body. What do I actually know? Who's controlling the universe? There's some person controlling the universe. And he must be extraordinarily powerful. Otherwise, how could he do it? So how can I actually judge how powerful he is? What do I actually know? So unless we become humble in that way, we may fold our hands and say, I'm your servant. But actually, we're not really understanding. We're not really humble. We're simply putting on a show of being humble for some other reason. But by use of intelligence, one can gradually appreciate something about Krishna's position, and therefore the more we become convinced that how great Krishna is, the more likely it is we're going to be able to serve him without trying to take his position or compete with him in some way. And the more we do that, the more Krishna reveals himself, the more illusion we can find us. We can understand how much illusion we're actually in. When we're not, those who don't have much of a realization, they think they're quite advanced and free from illusion. And those who have a lot of realization, they understand how much of illusion they're actually in to some degree. How powerful is Krishna's illusory energy, and how powerful Krishna's spiritual energy is. Just like in the spiritual world, it says, wherever Krishna goes, wherever Srimati Radharani is, that everything becomes blissful. It's just like when Srimati Radharani is there, it's spring. So how many of us walk into the temple room and feel that the temple room is full of bliss and love? How many of us walk in thinking, why did I get up so early? I should be asleep. Why am I going through such an austerity to be here? Because we're covered by illusion. Because we think we know what's going on, and even our mind tells us these things, we accept them, and we don't even question it. So that's called being the mode of ignorance. So, humility, which everything begins with, is understanding, I don't know what's going on. Actually, I'm not experiencing what I'm supposed to be experiencing. Therefore, I very humbly have to follow the instructions, coming down in disciplic succession, and pray for the mercy of Krishna and his representatives, that gradually this illusory energy will dissipate, and that I can actually understand and experience what reality is. And if we don't take that attitude, if we don't have that understanding, then devotional service goes on very, very slowly, if at all, our advancement. Because we're stuck in one conception. We think we know what's going on, and Krishna certainly won't disappoint us by revealing himself. And if we're attached to illusion, Krishna is not going to force us, generally speaking, by revealing himself so that our illusion goes away. So one has to make some room for being receptive for reality. And the only way of doing that is to accept that we don't know reality. And that we should become jignasu, interested in experiencing reality. It's not just some theory that, yes, let me study Bhagavad Gita, understand everything as it is, learn some verses, and I can compete with everyone else to see how many verses I know. I can show how erudite I am, but I've realized nothing, except for my whole study of Bhagavad Gita has simply not increased my spiritual realization, it's increased my false ego, and therefore I become proud of my knowledge instead of my body or my mind. I haven't understood that whatever I can remember, whatever I can't remember, whatever knowledge I have, it's all coming from Krishna. And it's all meant for Krishna's service, not for inflating my false ego. Therefore, material nature, yoga, chalati, manasa, is always ready to take away our intelligence and bewilder us. And therefore, one has to keep on coming back to the basic principle that I am an illusion. I'm covered by matter. I'm covered by the modes of nature. And I don't experience reality. And if I want to become happy, if I want to know what to do, I want to know what not to do, if I feel want to become enthusiastic in devotional service and render my service with complete confidence and patience and enthusiasm, I have to begin with understanding my present position and therefore becoming dutiful, patient in my service to Krishna. And then gradually as Krishna reciprocates, my confidence will increase. And as my confidence increases, therefore I'll become fixed in devotional service. And as I become more conscious of Krishna, my enthusiasm will also increase. So unless we start with humility, unless we start with the basic understanding, we don't know reality. And there's a process to understand reality that's been given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we have to follow it if we want to experience reality. Then we'll be easily deviated. We may even mechanically follow the process. We may chant Hare Krishna so many rounds a day. But if we don't understand what we're doing or why we're doing it, we don't understand our position, then we can go on chanting and doing service life after life. That would be nice. That's better than falling completely victim for Maya. But we won't make substantial progress to actually experience Krishna consciousness. And therefore, we'll be missing out on the most important thing in existence. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Here's the class differently. One guru? Yeah, one guru in one sense we can say that. Krishna is the one guru. there's only one guru, that's Krishna. And he has his various representatives who are speaking the same message. As it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Guru Ke Ta Guru Krishna Guru Ke, is that right? Shiksha Guru Ke Ta Krishnara Sarup Antaryami Bhakti Shrestha Eduri Rup. So Krishna Shiksha Guru Ke Ta. So one should know that the Shiksha Guru, Krishna Sarup, is a manifestation of the Supreme Personality of God. Antaryami, as the Super Soul and Bhakti Shrestha, as the best of the devotees, Eduri Rup, Krishna is appearing. So there's only one Guru, it's Krishna, and everyone else is his representative. Krishna knows exactly what we're supposed to be doing at every moment. So we're supposed to find out what Krishna thinks we should be doing at every moment. That's called service to Krishna. So Krishna doesn't have many opinions. He has one opinion. And Guru is helping us find out what Krishna wants. So Guru means one who knows what Krishna wants. Otherwise, how can he be Guru? So there's only one. There may be many manifestations of Krishna, but if they're actually representing Krishna, they should all be saying the same thing. The same thing that Krishna says in the Shastra. Otherwise, one of them, or all of them, are not representatives of Krishna if they don't agree with Krishna. Anything else? Yes. If you don't know someone, how can you love them? I mean, you're talking about the Brajavasis. What do you know about the Brajavasis?
I don't know.
So what can you say? They don't know Krishna. Of course they know Krishna. How can they love Krishna? They know all about Krishna. They know the most intimate part of Krishna.
But they don't understand the...
This creation, the material world, is not very important to understand. For them, it's useless. Nor is Krishna take it very significant. He said, Ugra, Rupa. He said, this is my horrible feature. Why should they know the horrible feature of Krishna? They know the loving feature of Krishna. We know Krishna through his horrible feature. It's not that we think we're better than the we know more than Vrijabhasis. There may be a king, he has his family, he loves the family, he provides all the everything they need. There's also some criminals, and he cuts off their head. So who knows the king better, the family? Who's intimately, you know, getting all the comforts and love and affection from him, or the criminals, their heads are being cut off. Who knows the king better? So we should get to know Krishna like the Brajavasis. But before that, we should act in such a way as Krishna doesn't have to cut off our heads. That much of the king we should understand. Before we develop an intimate relationship with him, we should at least learn how to respect him. Therefore, we're more in the position of being threatened with our heads being cut off. So we have to act properly towards the king. Then later on, when we're proper, then we may be introduced to his family. But he doesn't usually invite the criminals over for lunch. Yes. I don't see how the two fit together. But the answer is, unless one comes to the stage of Uttama Adhikari, one will not join Krishna's pastimes to get trained up to go to Bhakti Gaudiya. It's not we just pop into Bhakti Gaudiya, back to the spiritual world, here I am, you know, what am I supposed to do? I have to get trained up first. I have to join Krishna in his Leela in some universe. But at least in the last, when Krishna came here with his associates, the minimum qualification for actually joining Krishna's Leela, at least in Vrindavan, was bhava. The gopis were all, the minimum, they were on the bhava platform. They were actually had feelings towards Krishna. Why would we want to go back to Godhead unless we feel for Krishna? What would we do there? There's only feeling for Krishna, love for Krishna and service there. What would we do if we have no feelings for him? We get bored there. Everyone else is loving Krishna. We're wondering, what's the big thing, what's the big deal here? What's going on? Why are they all running out to greet Krishna when he's coming back from seeing the cows? He comes back every day. I think I'll stay back today. I don't really feel like it. So we have to develop feeling for Krishna. Maybe we'll be eligible to join for some time in Krishna's pastime to get trained up how to utilize those feelings correctly in Krishna's service. So generally, one actually, and the gopis who join Krishna's Leela, unless they obtain prema, there's no question of going back to Godhead, because prema is the minimum for a rasa with Krishna. So unless I have prema and then go beyond that, sneha, mana, raga, bhava, anubhava, raga, bhava, anubhava, or mahabhava, then there's no question of going back to Godhead, because I wouldn't have anything to do there. I have to be situated in rasa with Krishna, either as his servant, or as his friend, or as his parents, or as his lover. So unless I have prema, beyond prema actually, unless I'm trained up beyond prema, then I couldn't do anything there. That's all that's going on there. There's no bhakti course in the spiritual world. There's no Srimad Bhagavatam class. You learn who Krishna is, what we're supposed to do here. We have to get trained up here before we go back there. It's like, before you take your airplane out and fly it, better to get trained up on the ground. Not that you get, you know, you're in the airplane, they say, all right, you take over. Well, I never got any training here. Well, good luck. So this is the place to get trained up before we fly. Yes. Yeah, that's the mercy. He gave the holy name. The holy name is available, but not that everyone who's chanting Hare Krishna is experiencing Krishna prema. To get trained how to chant Hare Krishna, he's given the process. He's given the name. We have to become trained how to chant Hare Krishna. Yes. Just give him up. Why should you? If you take them seriously, oh, how can I give you up? I love you so much. I can't give you up. I'm so attached to you. Please don't go away. I want you to go away, but please don't go away. If you want them to go away, then they'll go away. And if we avoid the things that are causing lust and anger, we give up looking around to see can I enjoy here, or who I can enjoy. Then less than A, it won't be any question of having to give them up, because they won't even arise. So stop contemplating the objects of the senses. Stop trying to enjoy the material energy. Try to see how to utilize it in Krishna's service. And then there won't be any lust anymore to avoid or give up. Anything else? Nice being here. Thank you for your association. We look forward to seeing you again. So nice to see so many devotees coming to the program, chanting Hare Krishna, and distributing Krishna consciousness to others. So please continue in that way. And I'm sure Prabhupada and his representatives will give you all of the mercy. Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.